Hello and welcome to the Apache Cassandra Corner, a community-driven podcast for all things Apache Cassandra. The Apache Cassandra Corner is sponsored by DataStax. I am your host, Aaron Pletz. Well, hello everyone, and welcome back to this episode of the Apache Cassandra Corner. Joining me today are German Eichberger and Theo von Kray from Microsoft. German, Theo, welcome to the show. It's great to have you guys.
Great to be here.
Thank you. Yeah, great to be here.
Well, hey, why don't we just start with, getting to know a little bit about each of you. So, German, why don't you start by telling us a little about yourself?
My name is German Eichberger, and I'm a principal engineer on the Azure Managed Instances for Cassandra project, which basically is a software as a service offering for Apache Cassandra. And people in the community might have seen me at ApacheCon last year, where I gave a talk on performance in the cloud. And the year before, I gave a talk on our Cassandra proxy, which was an open source, and people need to do real-time migrations.
Excellent, excellent. Well, Theo, how about you?
Yeah, I'm Theo. I'm a program manager in the Azure Cosmos DB engineering team. My focus is what we call JVM ecosystem, which is anything that's Java-based that might be used to connect to Cosmos DB. But I also focus on the Cassandra offerings. So this is something called Cassandra API that's a part of Azure Cosmos DB. And also a relatively newer offering that German just mentioned that he works on, Azure Managed Instance for Apache Cassandra, which is something that we have built more recently.
Well, excellent, excellent. So, that'd be a great place to start. You know, how did the Azure Managed Instances for Cassandra come about? Because I know you've had that the Cassandra API for Cosmos DB for a while now. So yeah, what's the relationship there?
Yeah, it's a good story. I guess I've been working on these areas for a while now, and Cassandra APIs is going back more than 3 or 4 years that we first built this. And of course, Cosmos DB is a distributed database. In many ways, it's similar to Cassandra in terms of the topology, how it works. It has replication, mm-hmm. It has multi-region capability, it has partitioning and so on. And so we thought this would be a good candidate to build an API compatibility layer, so from this Cassandra API was born. So basically that just pretends to be Cassandra. You connect your applications to Cosmos DB, it behaves like Cassandra, but you get some of the benefits of Cosmos DB and so on. And so that was great, and that had some benefits, multi-tenancy, elasticity, and all of the good stuff that Cosmos DB as a service provides. Mm-hmm. But what we found was folks who were familiar with Cassandra and expected things to behave exactly like Cassandra sometimes could be a little bit disappointed, let's say. the features weren't all complete, and even the features that we did support didn't always necessarily behave the same way. So Cosmos DB has some differences by nature of what it is. Obviously we have a lot of collective experience here at Microsoft, and specifically in the Cosmos DB team of building distributed databases. So we thought, hey, let's get into the hosting business. Cassandra is a great database. We'll keep the pretending to be Cassandra over here and see how far that goes. But let's actually, give Cassandra its due and host it as a service. And so that's where Cassandra Managed Instance was born. And it really does, as its name implies, we're running open source Apache Cassandra. You can think of it as a robot for running the open source version of Cassandra that everyone knows and loves. And obviously we provide some value adds, but we are running the infrastructure for the customer. And of course, the compatibility stuff goes away and people get the behaviors that they are looking for, and that's why the service exists.
Well, excellent, excellent. Now, German, you've worked on that quite a bit, haven't you?
Yes, that's my primary focus, is to basically make that all one. And so
Oh,
yeah.
excellent, excellent. So what were some of the challenges that that you ran into with, building out that service for Azure?
Well, a lot of the challenges are on so basically connecting Azure to Cassandra. So as you might imagine, Azure is not written in Java.
I can imagine, yeah.
So there's some work there to kind of bridge the gap and make that work. And then as well, learning enough of Cassandra and making all those choices to get it run efficiently in Azure, because there's a bunch of things other clouds don't struggle with, so are different there. So how you configure it to be performant, and we have remote disks which have influences, and all the other underlying infrastructure as a service things, which are very different than from an on-premise. And so we had to come up with ideas how to run that, how to do the scaling up, scaling down efficiently in a cloud
Right,
environment.
right.
And then our big North Star is we want to be the best Cassandra on Azure. And so we occasionally kick around ideas like, should we rewrite a storage layer to be more Azure compatible and all those things. But so far we have mostly worked around Cassandra, not done too much inside it.
Okay. That's funny you bring up the point about Azure's not written in Java. And it reminds me of something, Theo, that you mentioned during your intro, that that you work with everything in the JVM at Microsoft. And I'm curious about that. Traditionally, Microsoft hasn't had a lot to do with the Java ecosystem. But of course, with Cassandra being written in Java, that's I can see why there's some overlap there. But perhaps you can talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so you're right. Traditionally, let's say Microsoft has been a little bit skewed towards .NET. Let's put it that way. In recent years, obviously we've seen the popularity of Cassandra and the popularity of Java in general. You can't ignore it. It's a huge ecosystem. It's a huge runtime environment. Has many languages that run on top of it. And in the last 2 or 3 years or so, independently from our team and other teams like us, multiple teams within Microsoft Azure have sort of popped up that are dedicated to various areas of the Java ecosystem, including a central engineering team that maintains its own JVM and JDK. So Microsoft has entered the world of being a JDK and JVM provider
Oh,
as well.
nice.
So, yeah, we can't. I mean, I won't pretend that we have the same footprint as we do with all of the .NET stuff. But certainly that whole map has changed very significantly over the last 2 or 3 years. So there are multiple teams and quite a lot of Java expertise within Azure and Microsoft these days.
Well, excellent, excellent. German, I know that in talking to you that you've worked a lot on the migration process, in bringing in like Cassandra data, like to Cosmos DB or to and from different Cassandra clusters. And I think I ran across a video that you did a couple of years ago on Cassandra proxy. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that and maybe a little bit about the kind of like the migration path in general there.
We offer several migration paths. So one is that we the one is that you just can basically connect your on-premise Cassandra to the Cassandra MI and just use the GOSSIP protocol to push data back and forth. But it only works for open source Cassandra,
Right,
and a lot of
right.
the customers with interest in moving to us, they run either they run the closed source ones like DSE or Scylla or Keyspaces. And so we had to develop another suite which is basically using the Cassandra API, basically what SQL shell and all this other access to move the data.
Okay.
And in order to make that real time, we then so we can use Spark as for the for the for the bulk of the data migration, but not to make it real time, you also need to do basically the technique which is most often used is a dual write. So you change your application and you write to the old database and you write to the new database and you do that simultaneously. And that's the common thing. But when you go to customers and tell them they have to change their code, they balk, they say that doesn't go over
well, huh?
yeah, it doesn't work for us. And so we said, let's make a proxy which does it all for you. And so I wrote a proxy which basically sits on the on-premise database and listens on a port and then accepts the SQL connections and then sends them to the database on the same node and then also forwards it to the cloud database. And that's the gist of it. And there's a lot of other things in it, like it logs when it can't fulfill a request, so you can then later do that, and a bunch of other goodies. But that's the main thing is that basically allows you to write to two databases at the same time with a very minor performance hit.
Oh, okay, excellent.
Yeah, and if you look in the industry, so almost everybody else also now has a proxy. So.
Oh right, yeah. That's become kind of a thing lately. Yeah, that everybody's coming up with their own proxies. Yep. German, about what was that? I think that was last month, right? When we did you know, we kind of worked together on a blog post on Planet Cassandra. Yeah, yep. And it was about you know, performance and resiliency with Cassandra. Mm-hmm. Can you maybe tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So as I said, we want to be the best Cassandra on Azure, and we have like lots of clusters for different customers, and mm-hmm. we all have performance problems, and we kind of got tired to meet with everyone and tell them how to fix their performance problems. So we kind of try to distill what we have learned into that blog post and how to basically use metrics to spot where there might be performance bottlenecks, and then we give give advice on how to kind of remediate them. For an example would be like you measure your IOPS and if you exceed the IOPS of your disk, then you need more disk, more IOPS on the disk, faster disk. Like, yeah, that's easy. You just get more disks and you get more IOPS, or you get more nodes, but that's basically the gist of it. What people need to do. So we give the metrics indications of what could be performance bottlenecks, and then also some tips on how to resolve that in the cloud environment. If you're on premise, then you have to do some more procuring.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. You know, German, I don't know if you noticed or not, but on Planet Cassandra, you know, it's driven by WordPress underneath. Mm-hmm. And we actually finally this week got a plugin there that lets us assign guest authors. So
nice.
I've actually changed the article so that it just has your name there. I'm not in there at all. So yes, we, you know, proper attribution, that is something we appreciate. So
then I will write more articles now as it works. Yeah.
So, you know, it's you know, in thinking about performance, you know, I can't help you know, but thinking about you know, Java performance as well. And Theo, you know, this is probably you know, more your area as well. But you know, when you're working with customers and looking at performance, you know, are there any tips on the Java side that you can offer?
I think on Cassandra, the one thing that we've noticed that's kind of specific to some degree to the type of infrastructure that you'll get in Azure is speculative execution. So it's not so much a Java tip as it is a tip around what exists in the Cassandra drivers.
Sure.
But you know, it's all on the client side, right? So you're running Java on the client side. There are multiple different languages, but in Java, speculative execution happens to work very well. So it's something that we recommend. We haven't really run into any specific issues around JVM tuning or anything like that.
okay,
from the
okay.
side or from the back end side. But like I said, one of our goals is to have a line of support on the Java side also, which includes to some degree going beyond end of life for the versions of Java that Cassandra runs on. But performance, most of what we've seen performance wise is more related to Cassandra configuration itself or Azure infrastructure. Like German was saying, it's not written in Java, so some of the connectivity and the dependencies that we take, the issues that we've run into are more around there. German, you might have more stories, particular stories around Java specifics, but I didn't come across many with customers.
Yeah, the main thing people talk to us about is they call it timeouts.
Oh sure,
so
sure.
So they say, well, we did this thing, but our client driver timed out. Why is that? And then it's always, is it a database? Is it a client driver? Is it a host? And it's always tough to basically determine that. And some of the timeouts we could determine was maybe you are doing too big of a fetch size or something.
Right, right.
So those are the things. It always starts with something like that. Well, we are getting timeouts, and then you have to figure out where exactly it is. And sometimes it's just the underlying infrastructure where there was a maintenance and they shut down the VM or something.
Gotcha. Yeah, you know, I used to do a lot of troubleshooting and working with development teams when I ran a lot of Cassandra infrastructure at Target, a few years ago. And what I would see a lot of was just kind of like what you said, with queries about just like pulling too much data back or having, like a fetch size too large. But also data modeling was something that that I saw a lot of folks, seem to struggle with a little bit on the development side. Mm-hmm. Have either of you noticed anything with that at all in your customer base?
Yeah, definitely. It's not really common because, most folks who use Cassandra, I think, certainly will understand partitioning to some degree.
Right.
But we have seen folks get stuck there. It's really like things like maximum number of tables or hot partitions or skew on the data and so on. But I was going to say earlier, I forgot to mention it. This was one of the other reasons that we built the service as an alternative to Cassandra API, because Cosmos DB and how it expresses itself at Cassandra API is less forgiving for those types of sort of anti-patterns, if you want to call them
sure,
that.
Sure.
Maybe that's a bit excessive, but when you have a throughput skew or data skew, for example, when you really need vertical scaling to forgive you in that scenario, Cosmos DB is a multi-tenant service. So, it's really built to scale out and controls its SLAs in that way. You can't sort of get away with it by just turning up the dials on the size of your nodes.
Oh, right.
So, we've seen that from folks coming from something like Cosmos DB and even other platforms that are similar to Cosmos DB, Amazon Keyspaces, for example, or other DynamoDB, other things that put restrictions because of the nature of what the service that they are. And then, you come into that world and it's from the Cassandra world and it's more difficult. We've seen it. I think it's fair to say, German, we haven't seen that a ton of times, but we still see it. We still see
We have customers who do crazy things and then they use the biggest skew available to kind of make it work.
Yeah.
And we try to nudge them to a better data model, but it's difficult.
No, for sure. Hey guys, I just want to say this has been really great. It's been good to have you both come on and kind of give us a little bit of a window into what goes on at Microsoft with Cassandra and Java too. This has been, I really learned a lot today. Absolutely.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Thanks for having us. It's good coming on.
All right. Well, hey folks, everybody have a great day and we'll talk to you later. And that's all for today. Thank you for listening to the Apache Cassandra Corner. Apache Cassandra is a registered trademark of the Apache Software Foundation. Thank you, and have a great day.